Ray. You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Welcome back, Catholic Connection Coast to Coast. My name is Teresa Tomeo, and if you have a question for our next guest, Father Richard Varis, you can give us a call at 877-573-7825, discussing his book, which is Jesus of Israel, Finding Christ in the Old Testament. And those of you who are Magnificat readers, and I know many of you are, and if you're not, you can subscribe to Magnificat by going to Magnificat.net, and I highly recommend that you do. I kind of look at the Magnificat as like a mini liturgy of the hours. It has prayers throughout the day and, of course, the daily Mass readings as well, and it's a great way to get to know Scripture and to get closer to the Lord. Why did you decide to write this book in particular?
Well, the book was written because of the encouragement of Father Peter Cameron, the editor of Magnificat, who's been very good friends with me since I had him in the seminary as my homiletics professor. And as I used to go through the RCIA when I was in the parish, and when I would teach the freshmen, we do Old Testament in freshman year here at the high school, I would just talk to him as a friend of things that to me were, I was finding amazing in the Old Testament, foreshadowing Christ, and things that the students were really responding to. And he was the one who kept saying, you have to write a book, you have to write a book. So he really arranged the whole thing.
All right. When you said you were amazed and you know, I really saw some things in the Old Testament about the Lord, can you give us a hint of what really kind of caught your attention?
Yeah, I mean, right from the very beginning, the first two creation stories. You know, there's two separate stories, and each one of them gives a different order in which God creates things. And so with the adults and with the students, you know, I would say, look, there's a different order. In the first story, man is created last. In the second story, you have Adam, then the animals, then Eve later. But in the first story, God just says things and they happen. And in the second story, we're familiar with the fact that God walks in the garden with Adam and Eve. He talks to them. He creates Adam with his hands, molding the mud like we would. So right at the outset, the first story shows a God who's divine, and the second creation story shows a God who's human. So the very first revelation that we have in the Old Testament of who God is already a prophecy of Christ, a God who's all-powerful and beyond our imagination, at the same time as a God who can communicate with us and is can be within his creation.
Why do you think so many people are intimidated by the Old Testament? Because a lot of people, when they hear the Old Testament, their eyes kind of start rolling back in their heads and they think, oh, no, I don't know if I can understand this or not.
Well, I think one thing is it's really long. You know, it's probably about four times the length of the New Testament. And I think we also have this image that the God of the Old Testament is scary and stern, and then Jesus comes and everything changes. And another thing I wanted to show with this book, and I try to show to my students, is in the Old Testament, we still see God. We see a God of mercy. You know, the covenants he makes, the covenant with Abraham, it's one-sided. God, they split these animals, and in the Middle East at that time, you would both walk through the animals to make a covenant. And Abraham sees a flaming torch come through the animals, but he's in a trance, and God does not have Abraham walk through the animals. So God is saying to Abraham, I'm going to keep the covenant. If the covenant I make with you, Abraham, is broken, I will end up like these animals, not you. The covenant with Moses, the first commandment was broken while Moses was still up on the mountain getting the tablets, because while he's doing that, Aaron is putting together a golden calf, is making an idol. And frequently through the Old Testament, the whole story of David and God making this promise to David of a king whose kingdom is going to last forever, despite the fact that the kings are going to sin. And so all through the Old Testament, you see this. You see the mercy of God working through the messiness of the Old Testament history. And so I think the length scares people, and I think people have a sense that the Old Testament God is someone frightening. But if God is one, then the salvation history begun in the Old Testament, already you see images, foreshadowings of the mercy and love that's going to take on flesh, that's going to become definitive in Jesus Christ.
In my Bible study last year, I'm in Catholic Scripture study, and last year we studied the book of Exodus, and what I thought was so cool was in Exodus, not only can you see Christ so much, but also I think the Mass the Catholic Mass is. It's just so strong there, especially Eucharist, and it's just the neatest thing to go through that, and you see, aha, this is why we do that, or this is where this comes from.
Yes, and then the manna coming from heaven, mm-hmm. and it's fascinating also in Exodus, because every time they complain, you know, they're given something that seems to point to Christ.
Right.
They complain that the water is bitter. We can't drink this water. And God tells Moses, take this piece of wood, throw it in the water, the wood of the cross. The manna that Jesus himself will speak of is a foreshadowing of himself, the manna in the desert, and he's the true bread of life. The serpent that's put on a pole at a certain point, serpents are attacking the people and they're dying. And they're told if you put a serpent on the pole and you look at that serpent, you'll be healed, which is, again, a very strange thing in the midst of the Old Testament for a people who don't worship idols or images, this directive that God gives them. And a bronze serpent would almost seem like the victory of death. You know, serpents are killing us, and now we're going to have to look at a big bronze serpent. Jesus will use that also to refer to himself. As a serpent was lifted up in the desert, so will the Son of Man be lifted up. And if you think about it, the cross of Jesus absolutely seems like the triumph of death, the victory of the devil, because God has been killed. But because of the resurrection, the cross for us becomes that thing we look upon to understand the mercy of God and the boundless love that God has for us.
Now, you've written this book, and I understand it's already being used as a Bible study. At the end of the chapters, you have reflection questions, and it's not too intimidating because the book isn't like a huge, you know, or a really, long read. I mean, it's not a short book, but I think it's relatively manageable if you just want to take this upon yourself and use it as a Bible study.
Absolutely, absolutely. The chapters are relatively short, and and the questions for reflection are help you go back into the chapter. A friend of mine in a parish in Florida who does the RCIA had contacted me a couple of weeks ago and said that they were going to use it there as a Bible study.
Jesus of Israel, Finding Christ in the Old Testament by Father Richard Veras. He's a regular contributor to Magnificat magazine. Those of you who subscribe probably are familiar with his writings, I would imagine. He also is a teacher of religion at the Archbishop Stepanak High School in White Plains, New York. He is a priest in the Archdiocese of New York and an active member of the Catholic lay movement, Communion and Liberation, and again, a frequent contributor to Magnificat magazine. In terms of the Old Testament, if someone wanted to, you know, kind of like dive into it, would you say your book is a good place to start, or could it be a companion piece maybe to a Bible study?
No, absolutely, because the book goes through the Old Testament chronologically. So it begins with Genesis, which we spoke about, and then from there, it goes into the choice of Abraham and the promise made to Sarah and God's mercy. We know that Sarah lied to God and laughed at him at a certain point. And a year later, it says God kept Sarah in mind and he gave her a baby. And it's a huge moment in the Old Testament, a huge moment in history, because everybody thought that God or the gods they believed in were waiting for them to deserve their love or deserve their good favor. And Sarah laughs and says, this is now a revolution, because I can really laugh now, because I laughed at God and lied at him, and still he had mercy on me. So then from Sarah, Abraham and Sarah, we go into Moses and the Exodus. I'm sorry, well, we have the creation stories and it speaks, we talk about Adam and Eve and how they're foreshadowings of Jesus and Mary.
Right.
And then Abraham and Sarah, Abraham's sacrifice of Isaac, which doesn't happen. Isaac, who's called continuously in the Old Testament Abraham's beloved son. And it's interesting because in the New Testament, only twice do we hear God the Father speak, and both times he refers to Jesus as my beloved son.
Yeah.
And so, and again, God turning things around. The sacrifice of Abraham, Abraham's sacrifice of Isaac, is one of the most difficult moments, I think, in the Old Testament for us to understand. It seems so harsh. But when you look at its fulfillment in the New Testament, you see that what God is saying is, for you to sacrifice your child to me is too much. I will sacrifice my son for you. So God's love is infinitely greater. The love he gives us is infinitely more than he ever even expects from us. Then from there we go into the whole story of Joseph in the Old Testament, who's a clear foreshadowing of Jesus. And then Moses, as we spoke about in the Exodus, and then a few chapters on David, because the promise to David is so important, because God, through the prophet Nathan, God says to David, I will give you a king, and his kingdom will last forever. And those chapters are the longest chapters in the book because I go through the whole history to show how both the kingdom split, the kingdoms fell, the Jews were exiled to Babylon. After that, they were under the empires, and it seemed impossible that God's promise could ever be fulfilled, that they were going to receive a king again, because by the time of Jesus, it was clear to the Jewish people they would not have their own political kingdom again. And when you understand that whole painful history, it helps you understand in the infancy narratives in Matthew and Luke how we keep hearing the name David, because the name David resonated with the Jewish people. This is the promise, the seemingly impossible promise. You know, today for you in the city of David, a Savior has been born. The angel came to Mary, engaged to a man named Joseph of the house of David. In Matthew's gospel, the angel comes to Joseph and says, Joseph, son of David, don't be afraid to take Mary as your wife. Even in his public ministry, when he's an adult, a blind man will scream out to Jesus,
son of David, have mercy.
Son of David.
Yeah.
And Jesus stops and says, bring him to me. You know, because this man understands who I am. And so a lot of time is spent on David, and then within David is where I'll deal with some of the prophecies, because it was, as I said, it was during the times of the kings that these prophets came forward to speak of this hoped-for Messiah. Again, in the midst of so many kings who were doing so many unjust and terrible things, who are not following God, you have the prophets coming forward and saying there is going to become a Messiah will come, a king will come, who is full of justice, who is full of mercy. And so it's really, David sort of brings us right into the New Testament.
Let's go to Thomas calling from suburban Detroit, Troy, Michigan, which is just north of Detroit. Hey, Thomas, good morning.
Good morning, Teresa, and good morning, Father.
Good morning.
I just tuned in, and I was struck by the relevance of using your book, Father, for Bible study with non-Catholics. I presume that would be wonderful not only for use with Catholics but non-Catholics. But my question would lie in this area. How can the book be used for apologetics, as somebody who wants to instruct and defend the faith?
Great question.
Well, in that sense, the book can be used to show that the Old Testament, when I teach my students, I'll also give them the years that these prophecies were written to see that these prophecies that seem so specific were written hundreds of years before Christ came. And in that way, I think it can be used apologetically. This book is also based on a lot of the things I did in the RCIA, and we had a number of Jewish converts in the RCIA at that time. And in fact, in the beginning of my book, I speak of one man, Eric. When we went through the whole history of the kings and David, this man who had been raised not as a secular Jew, he had a little bit of Hebrew school, a little bit of knowledge, but he was so moved at the end of this one session where we're speaking of the promise made to David and Jesus as the fulfillment. And he said, you know, no one ever told me that Jesus was of the line of David. So this man understood as a Jew that they're waiting for someone of David's line to come, the Messiah. And he always thought Jesus was someone we came up with from left field somewhere. And when he saw the proposal that Jesus is of the line of David, everything changed for him from that day on when he was coming. And so certainly the book shows the continuity of the Old Testament and the New Testament.
And that's what I love about studying the Bible, because the Catholic churches, of course, we came up with the Bible, of course, but what I'm saying is that you can see it so much in Scripture.
Absolutely. Especially, I mean, when you live your faith, you find yourself able to identify with what you see happening in the Old Testament. You know, the Jewish people bringing... If you read in Deuteronomy, how the directive to bring the first fruits to offer, and it looks exactly like the gifts that we offer at the Mass. You know, and those first fruits, in a certain sense, were literally the fruits that reminded them of the gift of the land that God gave them after the Exodus. You know, and for us, the Eucharist is the concrete reminder, you know, that Christ is present. In fact, in the book, I spend the first part of the book speaking of the notion of memory, which for Jews and Christians is the same. Memory is not remembering in a nostalgic way something of the past, but being reminded that God is present now. You know, as if a mother telling her uppity child, you know, remember who you're speaking to. Remember, I'm present now. And so when the Jews would offer those first fruits, those fruits were a reminder, remember where these came from. These you own these, you have this land because God gave it to you. You know, the Eucharist for us, remember, Christ is with us now.
Mm-hmm.
The promise, Emmanuel, God with us, is he's with us now in the flesh. And so absolutely, you see, you recognize that fulfillment. I have a friend who's a Jewish convert who became Protestant first and then found later went in out of curiosity into a Catholic church, and he said the way we were worshiping, he felt so much at home.
Yeah. Rosalind Moss often talks about that, about, and she calls herself a completed Jew in terms of, you know, coming full circle. I mean, she said there's no better place for a Jewish person than the Catholic faith, and I love that description. And I just
Absolutely.
Also love, for example, there's so many other things in the Old Testament, you know, the Ark of the Covenant, and comparing that to Our Blessed Mother as the Ark of the New Covenant. I mean, it's endless.
Yes, which appears in Revelation.
Yeah.
You know, in Revelation, they see the Ark of the Covenant, and what do they see it as? A woman.
Right.
With child, clothed
mm-hmm.
with the sun.
Yep, yep. Well, Father, thank you for this book, and thank you for your work with Magnificat, and let's just pray that more people, and especially Catholics, embrace studying the Bible, you know, not just, let's say, in one course, but in a daily basis and reading it, and there's so many great resources out there now to study the Bible, and there's really no excuse anymore, and I would just encourage people not to be afraid of it. You know, be not afraid, because God does speak to us. This is his love letter to us, and he does speak to us, and you will be amazed, folks, when you start studying Scripture, how it'll seem like God is moving around the readings, and I'm sure you've had this experience, Father, to address the particular situation you're in, you know? And you
Absolutely.
Think, wow, how did you do that, God?
Absolutely. And you see God working in the mess of human life,
yeah.
which is fantastic.
Yeah. Well, God bless you, Father. Continued success with this book and with your ministry, and thanks for being such an amazing witness for our faith. And hopefully we'll get lots of people to buy the book.
Everywhere you turn, you hear about the mortgage meltdown. The one question that everyone asks is, how did we get here? Does this sound familiar? Teaser rates, interest-only loans, adjustable rates, low minimum payments. Those are some of the hooks mortgage companies use to get you to call them. But during the same time, Ken Town from Fellowship Home Lending was saying,
slow down, review all of your options, and get your financial house back in order. Put a plan in place for you and for your family.
Now, who do you call to get a handle on your budget? The companies that were clamoring with wild offers before now and want to clean up the mess they got you into in the first place? Or Ken Town, who has had the same message today he's had for 6 years? Who knows what you're going to hear next from those mortgage companies, but as far as Fellowship Home Lending, you know what you're going to hear.
Whether your goal is to consolidate debt or get out of that adjustable rate mortgage, our goal here at Fellowship has always been to put a plan in place so that 2 years from now, you're in a better place than you are today.
Call 800-660-6433 and talk to Ken at Fellowship Home Lending. That's 800-660-6433 or fellowshiploans.com.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
Last fall, Father Ricardo spoke to a combined meeting of the men's and women's groups at St. Patrick's Church in Brighton, Michigan. His topic was the four goods of marriage, a great subject for couples. If you don't know about them, be sure to tune in. Listen to Christ is the Answer Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday afternoons at 5, and Sunday mornings at 11 on 990 WDEO, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet. Christ is the Answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Welcome back, Catholic Connection, coast to coast and around the world, EWTN Global Catholic Radio. Good to be with you. Name of this program, Catholic Connection. My name, Teresa Tomeo. Great to have Wendy Wright back with us. And Wendy, haven't talked to you in a while. Good to have you on the program. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, and I'm excited to talk about this topic, of course. Planned Parenthood, not on my list of favorites, as you know, and I know the same is for you, but good news in the sense of the exposure that they are getting, which is really putting them on the defensive. The truth will set us free, as Jesus told us, but starting to come out, isn't it, about Planned Parenthood?
It is, and a lot of it is due to the perseverance of one man, Phil Klein in Kansas, that Bill Klein was the Attorney General and then lost the election, a lot having to do with because he really went after the abortionists in Kansas. But he's now a district attorney in one of the counties, and in that position, he has filed 107 criminal charges against Planned Parenthood, and it's for valid, very disturbing incidences that include committing late-term abortions that are illegal under Kansas law, not reporting them accurately. In fact, what they're doing is they're covering up what their actions. And there's been significant evidence against Planned Parenthood covering up statutory rape. That is, you have an adult man having sex with a minor girl. She gets pregnant. He takes her to a Planned Parenthood, and at times these girls may even tell the Planned Parenthood employees that they're being abused, but the employees do nothing about it. They don't report it to the state authorities. Instead, just do the abortion, hand the girl back to her abuser. And this seems to be happening around the country, and Phil Klein, it seems to have uncovered this kind of thing happened in Kansas. But there needs to be more attention brought to it. The mainstream media refuses to cover this, so I'm so thankful for shows like yours that's getting the information out.
Now, in terms of the charges in Kansas, do we think they're going to stick?
You know, it's very likely that they will because there's such hard evidence. It's based on actual records. And the I think what we need to pray for is that there's the longevity that Phil Klein is only going to be in this position for about another year. And he's not likely to continue on after that. And so what's going to be necessary is for the state authorities to have the perseverance to continue on. And what we have found around the country is that government authorities just simply refuse to hold Planned Parenthood accountable. They could be committing some of the most egregious violations, and yet you'll have some of the top officials, including medical officials, who just will look the other way.
Now, why is that, do you think? Is it because they just don't want to, they're afraid? Is it a fear thing? Is it a money thing? Or both, do you think?
I think it's a bit of collusion, and that is that they're all friends. You have the abortion industry being huge contributors to the political campaigns of some of the politicians. You have a common occurrence is to have Planned Parenthood have the congressman or congressman's wife or the publisher of the local newspaper or the wife of the publisher on their board, and that gives it almost like an inside sense to these high officials that they are one of the Planned Parenthood, they're one of them. And so there's almost a sense of wanting to protect them. So I think that it has partly to do with ideology, that they believe that Planned Parenthood is providing some necessary need for women, and that they're being persecuted by pro-lifers. And so any time there's an accusation against Planned Parenthood or any of the abortion industry, instead of looking into it, in fact, even looking at perhaps the person who's making the accusation is not even pro-life, instead there's a knee-jerk reaction to protect Planned Parenthood. And then, of course, I think there's something just spiritually evil going on, that Planned Parenthood is involved in the sacrifice of innocent children. And we know from the Bible, especially the Old Testament, that is something that was done by pagan countries as a sacrifice to their gods. And so I can't help but think that there is something spiritual that goes on.
Now, in terms of them being on the defensive, though, they are trying to, you know, they're not happy about this coverage. There has been some coverage in the secular press, especially, for example, of how they're trying to go into some of these communities. Aurora, Illinois is a good example of, like, with their stealth operations, trying to go in under the, you know, under the radar, so to speak, because they don't want the exposure. They don't want people to know what's going on, because people instinctively don't want an abortion mill in their backyard. Now, as you said, they can blame, you know, oh, they want to protect them from the pro-lifers, which, by the way, I think it's important to note that there has not been any violence for, what, over a decade. And the violence that was happening at abortion mills is not by anyone associated, by the way, with legitimate pro-life groups. I want to make sure that gets out there. But they argued, they did get a lot of coverage, secular coverage, in terms of the whole situation in Aurora, Illinois, which I thought was really good.
Yes, the fact that they came in, built this massive complex, and did it surreptitiously. They did not use their name, Planned Parenthood. Instead, they came up with really, I think, something that's meant to be a slap at us. The name of their business development was Gemini Office Development, which, when you look at the acronym for that, is G-O-D. So clearly they meant that to be kind of a slap, that they, in fact, are the ones in charge, in control, and they can do whatever they want. And it almost seems like that's what's happening. It wasn't until the office building was nearly complete that people began to realize what was being built, and there have been challenges to it. Thankfully, there are enough concerned citizens in Aurora who have been stepping up to the plate and saying, this is wrong. This was done fraudulently. We don't want this in our community, and we certainly don't want liars and cheats in our community.
Yeah, fortunately, they went ahead and continued with that mill, but I think there's still some issues going on there. Now, we mentioned Kansas. You mentioned, I think it was Connecticut, and then also Cincinnati. There's another issue in Cincinnati. So this is not just happening in Kansas. This is happening across the country.
Right. In Cincinnati, there have been two incidences of young girls being abused, one by a stepfather, one by a soccer coach, who became pregnant, were taken into the local Planned Parenthood. Both of them told, and these were at separate times, told the Planned Parenthood officials that they were being abused, and instead they simply abused them more by committing an abortion on them and then handing them back to their abuser. Both of these girls, I believe in both of those cases, they have filed civil suits against Planned Parenthood. And that's what this may come down to. Since governing officials seem not likely to do their job, it's going to oftentimes take civil action to bring these officials to account. Then we need to pray for juries that will do the right thing and for judges that won't undo jury verdicts.
What can the average pro-life person do listening to the show right now?
Yeah, they need to talk about this. Talk about it with your friends, with your relatives, because so many people still think that Planned Parenthood is simply a medical operation. A lot of people don't even know that Planned Parenthood does abortions.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It is shocking to me that they don't know that, but we need to just bring this up in conversation so people are aware that not only is it the largest abortion provider in the country, but they're also involved in illegal activity all around the country. And we really need to just build up the public support against Planned Parenthood. Now, a number of us are working with legislators in the state and in Congress to try and come up with ways to defund Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood gets one-third of its income from our tax dollars. Over $300 million a year of their income comes from us, our pockets. So we're trying to find ways to defund Planned Parenthood in a way that even its supporters in the legislatures will agree that, for example, our tax dollars should not go to organizations involved in criminal activity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know what's interesting about this? It reminds me of the story out of Portland, Maine, where that school district approved the whole, birth control thing for middle school kids. And, you know, for days I was talking on this program, why isn't anybody talking about the fact that sex with minors is illegal? Hello. Then finally the prosecutor comes out and says, you know, if you're going to prescribe birth control to these kids, you're going to have to report this because this sexual activity is illegal. You know, the common sense factor, Wendy, just seems to just go right out the window when we're talking about this.
It does. There are things that just as you mentioned, the first thought that most people will come to mind is, wait a minute, if a 10-year-old girl, a 12-year-old girl is pregnant, who got her pregnant? And wouldn't that be illegal? And, of course, in most states, if not every state, that would be illegal. And yet Planned Parenthood just covers right over that, this moves right along to say this girl is in need of medical help. And if it's reported to the authorities, then she won't come to them for medical help. Well, frankly, the pregnancy is evidence that she's being abused. So instead of trying to simply erase the evidence, which, of course, it's never erased, that the little girl is always going to feel the pain of her baby having been killed.
Mm-hmm.
By doing so, they're allowing that abuser to continue abusing that girl. In one case, there was a man who had abused a girl. She became pregnant three times. Three times he took her to the same abortion clinic. And none of those times did the abortionist ever report. So Sometimes I think we need to help people think this through, just like what you have done, in pointing out what should be obvious. It's obvious to us, but clearly it's not obvious to everyone.
And I think you bring up an important point about talking about this in general conversation when these issues come up, not to hit people over the head with the Bible or anything, but to have the facts, because, you know, the facts are always on our side because God is the author of everything. And, you know, and talk about these issues. Because just a quick example before I let you go, my husband was visiting with his family in Pennsylvania, and he was driving around with his brother, and they were going to go eat, and they were going to go to this particular restaurant. My husband said, nope, can't go there. My brother-in-law said, why? And he said, because they're a top supporter of Planned Parenthood, and we don't support Planned Parenthood. And my brother-in-law said, well, what's the matter with Planned Parenthood? Not knowing anything about it. And when Dominic told him, my husband told him what they were, he was like, I didn't know that. Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad you... He didn't know. Good guy, you know, church-going guy, but just had no idea about Planned Parenthood. Because you and I... And people who are in the pro-life movement are up to our eyeballs in this kind of stuff. We see it every day and we hear about it. But the average person may not be aware.
They're not. And what I find oftentimes is women have themselves gone to Planned Parenthood when they were in college or when they were younger. They just knew it as a place to go get their birth control. And they're not aware of all the insidious things that Planned Parenthood is involved in. So then, as they get older in life and they get those direct mail pieces and the asking for money, they think, well, you know, they helped me out when I was younger. I'll give them money now. So I think there are a lot of people who are pro-life who unwittingly are helping to support Planned Parenthood, knowing that they're funding the enemy.
Yeah. Well, you've got some great information on your website, so I just want to direct people to Concerned Women for America, CWFA.org, Concerned Women for America. Wendy, good to talk to you again.
Great. Thanks for talking to you. Thanks for having me on.
All right. God bless you. Wendy Wright, president of Concerned Women for America, giving us an update on Planned Parenthood on the defensive. And again, she brought out some really good points in terms of just general conversation with people and explaining what's going on here and the truth behind Planned Parenthood.
Joining Michigan Catholic Credit Union has never been easier with the Easy Switch Kit. They've created an Easy Switch Kit that's a hassle-free way to switch your automatic deposits and payments to a credit union checking account. It's easy to do, and it will allow you to have control over the whole switch process. After you switch, you can build convenient services into your account, such as a Master Money Debit ATM card, online account access, and bill pay. The credit union has some of the best rates and terms for new and used car loans, home equities, mortgages, and much more. Access our Easy Switch Kit online at www.mishcathcu.org. Then click on MCCU's Easy Switch Kit or call toll-free 1-866-NOW-MCCU. And a representative will help you switch to Michigan Catholic Credit Union today. Federally insured by NCUA.
Good day, I'm Al Cresta. I want to wish you a blessed Christmas season and a new year in which you and your family continue to grow in Christ-likeness. Thanks for your generous support of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, Doctor Is In, Heart, Mind, and Strength, and Crest in the Afternoon. These programs could not be produced without your contributions. Now, the end of the year is upon us, and I'd ask you to consider making an additional gift to Ave Maria Radio. We are a tax-exempt charity, so your 2007 check will count as a charitable deduction on this year's taxes. Just send your gift to the Ave Maria Communications Guild. That's AMC, Post Office Box 504, Ann Arbor, Michigan, 48106. That's AMC, Post Office Box 504, Ann Arbor, Michigan, 48106. Remember, your check must be dated 2007. And may God bless you in your generosity.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Catholic Connection coast to coast. My name is Teresa Tomeo, EWTN Global Catholic Radio. Good to be with you. Very excited about this book and our guest, Anthony DiStefano. He's also the author of a terrific book that did extremely well, that sold like crazy when it came out. That book was called A Travel Guide to Heaven. This one, 10 prayers God always says yes to. And Anthony, of course, works with Priests for Life, and we're just happy to have him back on the program because this is a very cool book. Buongiorno, Antonio. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
And, you know, I had to say, I'm going to let my audience in a little secret. First of all, thank you for the beautiful inscription and signing the book. I greatly appreciate it. And my husband and I just loved the dedication in the book for my brothers, Vito, Carmine, and Salvatore, and my sister, Elisa. I thought, wow, isn't that cool? What a great, beautiful Italian family you must have.
Yes. Yeah. I'm very blessed.
So why writing about these 10 prayers? What prompted the thoughts for the book?
Well, I guess it's just because, like a lot of other people, I've been on the receiving end of a lot of no's from God, a lot of refusals in my life. God said no to me an awful lot, as he says no to a lot of people for different reasons. And I thought it would just be nice to have a book that's focused exclusively on prayers that God can always be relied upon to say yes, because there are prayers like that, and yet there's really not a lot of books that focus on that.
One of the things that you talk about, which I think is great, is that we have gotten into the habit, I think, in this country, particularly because of the fact that we have so much and we are used to being able to go anywhere and buy whatever we want and get whatever we want. You know, when we want something and we want it now, we can pretty much, if we have the means, get it. And I think sometimes we treat God like that.
Yeah, we do have a very consumer-oriented society, and we tend to sometimes treat God like he's one big supermarket clerk, you know, and the world is a big Walmart, and we want, as you said, this, that, and the other thing. We want it now. You know, we're all about instantaneous gratification, and as Mother Angelica used to say, all these the prayers that we say a lot are all the gimme variety. Give me this, give me that, give me that. And that's not the way all prayers are, obviously.
What was the reaction when people started reading the book and started, did people think that they were going to, you know, read this book and all of a sudden think they could pray and get that new car, that new house, or, you know, that new job that they wanted?
I have done some radio programs, and yes, I think there was a little bit of fear on the part of some people that, you know, the title's got, it sounds a little gimmicky, and maybe this was going to be one of those name it, claim it type books where, you know, you wave a magic wand and all of a sudden God answers this prayer. That this is not like that at all. All of these prayers in this book are all legitimate, and they're theologically sound because they're all based on either promises that God has made us in the Old and the New Testaments or commands that he's given us. And God never promises us anything or gives us any commands unless he's going to follow through on those.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, these kind of prayers, even though they're not of the gimme variety, are very, very powerful. And if you say them, they have the power to dramatically change your life.
Without giving too much away, because I want people to get the book because it's very good, can we go over the prayers?
Sure, absolutely. Okay. I'll read them over. You know, God, show me that you exist is the first prayer. So many people, you know, doubt God's existence. They don't even know if he's there. God, make me an instrument to help other people. God,
that's a dangerous one to ask, though.
God answers that one real
quick.
Fast. You say that prayer, you're going to have some needy people on your doorstep before the day is out, probably. But when you say that prayer and you help other people, God immediately starts making you a better instrument. And so you wind up reaping a lot of benefits for that. You know, get me through this suffering is another prayer. It's a hard prayer to say because God doesn't always remove the suffering itself, but he always gets you through. Get me through the suffering. God, forgive me. You know, so many people can't believe that God will forgive them. They're carrying around with them the weight of enormous sins from the past. And meanwhile, they don't understand that God will forgive them and lighten that burden. God, give me peace. You know, people are so wrapped up in yoga and stress management, and then they completely forget that God has a very big role in the whole peace process. Give me peace. Give me courage. Give me wisdom. God, bring good out of this bad situation. You know, that's a hard one to say, too. And the final prayer in the book is, God, lead me to my destiny, because every single human being is special, unique, precious, and has a special destiny.
So how did you come up with these 10 prayers, obviously based on your own life experience?
They are based on my life experience, but as I said, they really are solidly scriptural and theologically sound. These are commands that God has given us, and they're promises that he's made to us in Scripture, in the Old and the New Testaments, in the Gospel. So what I did was I took these promises that he's made, and I just put them in the form of a prayer. You know, I put them in the language of prayer. God's already said that he's going to say yes to them. There are more than 10 prayers that he always says yes to. Maybe if this book does good, Doubleday will want me to write 10 more prayers God always said yes to. But I just thought that these were, if you start with these, your life will change so dramatically, I think that'll be a great start.
And you know what you'll find, too, and I'm sure you've found this to be, when you have a, when you're open to God and when you're trying to be in tune with Him, that sometimes He answers prayers even if you don't feel like you're specifically asking for a prayer. You know what I'm saying? If you're not in prayer. For example, preparing for this show, I get sent a lot of things that are happening, a lot of stuff in the pro-life movement, a lot of stuff about attacks on the church, and sometimes you can feel very overwhelmed and almost oppressed. And this morning, when I was putting together the news and preparing for the show, I just actually physically felt like there was the weight of the world was on my shoulders, and it was just, oh, I can't take it anymore, one of those Calgon, you know, take me away moments. And then I went to do the readings, and the gospel for today was just such an answer to prayer for me from the Gospel of St. John, chapter 14. Jesus said to his disciples, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. You have faith in God, have faith also in me." And then he goes on to talk about the dwelling places that he's setting up in heaven for us. But to me, that was God saying, calm down, it's okay, I'm in charge, just keep doing your job, and everything's going to be fine. And that happens to me an awful lot when there is something on my heart where I don't even consider it maybe a prayer, but it's just in my mind, and yet God comes to us and helps us and gives us that peace.
Yeah, and you know, you just said a prayer God always says yes to. He said, you know, be calm. There are other places where he says, dismiss all anxiety from your hearts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God is telling us that we have the power to always have peace if in Him. No matter what's going on in our lives, no matter what kind of anxieties we may feel, no matter what problems we have, we always have access to deep peace, a peace that transcends all understanding, as the Bible says. But we have to have faith, we have to trust in Him. But you're exactly right.
You know, it's interesting, and I was just saying, you know, in talking about your book when I was opening up the show this morning, talking about how if we're parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, if we have any relationship with children and or involved in their care, we can understand the importance of saying no. We can understand why we don't give kids everything they want, and if we do give them everything they want, it could end up to be their ruin, you know, because number one, they're spoiled, number two, they never face any challenges in life. But yet, when it comes to us, and we go to God and we say, this thing I must have, and this is absolutely the right thing, and I have to have this, or I will just die, then we get all upset if God doesn't grant us that particular prayer.
Yeah, and we always have to remember, God is like a great Father. He gives us what we need, not necessarily what we want. Now, and that's an old expression, but it's so true. We want so many things, and we think they're best for us. But the truth of the matter is, if we're really honest with ourselves, we don't know what's around the corner. We don't know what's going to happen 5 minutes from now, much less 5 years from now. We have no idea how various things that we're asking for are going to impact our lives in the long run and those around us. God has our best interests at heart, and He sees the big picture. He sees you now. He sees you 10 years from now. He sees you as an old person, you know, and His goal is always the same. He wants to get you to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And He evaluates every single request that you make in light of that global objective. You know, on His, you know, tremendous radar screen where He can see everything, He knows what's best for you. Now, that takes a lot of trust for us to say that. The other thing is, you know, we have to remember that God's delays are not God's denials. Sometimes God will say yes to us, but, you know, God is the God of perfect timing. If you ask for, advance in your career or something like that, you may not get it right now. But maybe God does have something in mind for you that's even better. He has a mm-hmm. different job in mind for you, you know, at a totally different company or something like that. You may have to be fired from this job before that job can happen. You know, we don't know what's happening. God sees everything.
Now, you were talking about in the beginning of the book about how you did not get a job in politics that you really, really wanted, and you were really disappointed because you were praying, even though you hadn't been that active in church, of course, you know, you were praying and praying for this position. What did that do to you in terms of your faith life at the time?
Well, this was a long time ago. I start off the book with one of those no's that God has given me. I was involved in politics. I was writing for some campaign, and had the candidate won, I would have become press secretary to the governor of New York. And I had everything all planned out. I was going to do this. I was going to do that. I was even going to run for office someday. I had it all planned, and I thought this was the best possible thing for me. Well, that guy lost, and he really lost big. And I had prayed so much that I say in the book that I wasn't on very good speaking terms with God mm-hmm. for a few months. But the truth of the matter is, looking back at that, it was the best possible thing for me. I mean, I'm so glad that God said no to me, because had He said yes, that I would have gotten involved with politics. I'm clearly unsuited to the political life. I would have never got involved with Father Frank Pavone. I would have never met Janet Moran. I would have never got involved in the pro-life movement. I would have never written my first book. I would have never written the second book. And I wouldn't be speaking to you this morning. You know, I wouldn't have met my wife.
Because your life would have taken a totally different path.
And not for the better.
Right.
I would no way would I have been as fulfilled as I am today.
Well,
so I'm very happy God said no to me.
And yeah, I know, and I can totally relate. That's why I love this book, because and I had a very prominent position that I was fired from in TV News, and at the time it was the most painful thing, because I thought, oh, my goodness, what am I going to do now? What's the world of Detroit media going to do without me on the air, and yada, 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 and whine. And yet, had I not been pulled from that job, my marriage would have fallen apart, because it was falling apart. It gave me time to heal, to look at my life, to get my life back on, you know, back together and back on track. And then it took my life in a totally different direction. And the same thing, I would not be doing what I'm doing today had I still been employed at that particular TV job.
Yeah.
And yet at the time, it was the most painful thing.
God can always bring good out of every bad situation. You know, and that quote from Romans 8, all things work together for good for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. That is one important quote. If you're going to remember a Bible quote, memorize that one, because it's so true.
Anthony, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more with you about 10 prayers God always says yes to, divine answers to life's most difficult problems. And Anthony will be back with us if you have a question on his book. And by the way, remember, Anthony is also the author of A Travel Guide to Heaven. 877-573-7825, 877-573-7825. Anthony, I want to say DiStefano, but it's DiStefano. Anthony DiStefano. All right, we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
The car business is a numbers business, and here are some pretty impressive numbers for Gene Butman Ford, starting with 50. That's 50 years they've been serving the Ypsilanti community, which translates into 2,600 weeks or 18,250 days. You can only imagine the number of vehicles that includes and the number of satisfied customers. Just think about it. No one stays in business that long without doing things right. And isn't that the kind of company you trust to sell you a car? Here's another impressive number. 6 years winning the President's Award for Customer Sales and Service. That puts Gene Butman Ford in the top 5% of dealers nationally. Now is a great time to find out why so many people have spent so many years buying from Gene Butman Ford. Because they'll beat your best competitive deal and donate $100 to the Catholic organization or church of your choice. Visit Gene Butman Ford at 2105 Washtenaw Avenue in Ypsilanti, or online at ButtmanFord.com.
You can show your support for the pro-life cause in Washington, D.C.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Towards the end of 1973, some pro-life leaders voiced concern that January 22nd, the first anniversary of Roe v. Wade, would come and go without notice. About 30 people committed to memorializing that infamous decision and petitioning Congress for redress. On January 22, 1974, the first March for Life was held in Washington, D.C., with approximately 20,000 Americans rallying on behalf of the unborn. In recent years, 200,000 have gathered. The 2008 March for Life will be held on January 22. For more on how you can get involved, go to marchforlife.org.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelter, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Welcome back. Having a great conversation on 10 prayers God always says yes to, divine answers to life's most difficult problems. Anthony DiStefano is also the author of A Travel Guide to Heaven. And the website, by the way, if you'd like more information to get the book, is 10prayers.com. That's very easy, 10prayers.com. All right, now, what other little tidbits of information can you give people? Let's say there's someone listening, Anthony, who's fallen away from God and it's had a lot of pain. You talked about the one guy you met when you were in the store and the guy behind the counter, and he was talking about how all the pain and all the suffering he had in his life, and it really turned him away from God, especially the fact that his young daughter died suddenly, and they're not sure why she died, and he was just very, very angry and a bitter man. That's a tough one in terms of people who've gone through an awful lot in their life. I mean, there's some people who, like this guy, get very hardened. Now, there's other people who go through a lot of suffering, and they use it for, you know, redemption, and it really helps them see God's plan for them. But it's a tough thing to talk to people about, isn't it?
And there's a difference between dealing with someone pastorally and then talking about something theologically. Someone who's been through a really tough time, you know, it's not going to help very much to say anything theological to them necessarily. They're going through pain, and we have to remember that when someone's going through suffering, it's like, you know, having an open wound. And, you know, if you go to a doctor and you want to treat your wound, and the doctor starts talking to you about the reasons why blood clots and platelets form and giving you all kinds of definitions, it's not going to help you very much. What you need is for him to bandage up the wound and so it can heal. Father Frank always says, you know, when you're suffering, it's like going through a storm, you know, and you're in a car and it's raining and pouring and there's thunder and lightning. And you know, at that moment, you don't want to think about, well, where storm clouds come from or anything like that. You've got to concentrate on getting through, on holding the steering wheel and just, you know, staying on the road and all the rest. And a lot of times that's the kind of prayer that God will answer. Get me through this storm, God. He'll get you through without you despairing or losing hope or getting angry at him. But that said, this idea of tragedy and good coming out of tragedy, it's something that's so hard for us to believe, especially when, you know, when someone has died and we cannot see what good could possibly come out of it. We have to have trust, and we have to think back to the most incredible example of good coming out of bad, and that's Christ himself. You know, I say in the book, what's the worst thing that has ever happened in the history of mankind? It wasn't the terrorist attacks of 9/11. It wasn't anything like that. It was the murder of God. You know, we actually killed God on a cross. You know, that's the crime of deicide. Nothing could ever be worse than that. And yet, what did God do with this worst thing of all time? Out of that came the resurrection. And the resurrection means that not only did Christ rise, but all of us get a chance to go to heaven and see our loved ones again. And this is what my whole first book, Travel Guide to Heaven, was about. You know, that's the best thing that could happen, that we have life eternal. So what God did was he didn't just pull a little good out of a little bad. He pulled the best possible good out of the worst possible bad. Now, if he could pull the best out of the worst, then he could certainly take any of the bad things that happen in our life and pull some good out of them. It's a profound theological concept, but if only we could trust in God and really try to interiorize that, you know, that would really help all of us.
Let's go to the phones. We have a call coming in from Doylestown, Pennsylvania. By the way, if you have a question for Anthony on his new book, 10 Prayers God Always Says Yes To, you can give us a call. Phone lines are open, 877-573-7825. Chris, good morning to you.
Good morning, Teresa. How are you?
I'm good.
Here's my comment. It's not so much a question, it's a comment. I wanted to ask if you had a reversion to the Catholic faith that sort of coincided with the most down time in your former professional life.
You're talking about me, or are you talking about Anthony, or both of us?
Anthony, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Go ahead, Anthony.
I was never very religious. My family, we read off some of those names earlier. We were typical lukewarm Catholics, even cafeteria Catholics. That's how I grew up. We didn't go to church at all. And so my 20s and my teens were not spent living any kind of holy life. I broke a lot of the commandments, some in record numbers. And it wasn't that I had any kind of tremendous suffering or anything in my 20s. It's just that I realized that this wasn't what I wanted. This wasn't giving me any kind of joy. There must be something more than this. And at that particular time, I happened to meet Father Frank Pavone, who was my parish priest, who my sister introduced me to. And he, in going to him with a lot of questions I had about the faith, he started me getting me involved in the life of the church community and all the Right to Life activities in Staten Island, New York, and that it grew from there.
Right. I had a similar experience. Not that everybody wants to hear about it, but it's interesting. It was a prayer that I didn't think would get answered as quickly and abruptly as it did. I lost a great job in an ad agency. And I remember thinking, oh, my gosh, I'm going to die. That was my identity. But anyway, now I work for the Catholic Church.
Yeah, isn't that funny how things work?
Bye-bye.
Chris calling from Doylestown, Pennsylvania. You know, it's very hard when you're going through a difficult time, you know, to think that this is all going to work out okay, even if the pain isn't going to go away. But that has been the experience of my life over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's true. All things work together for good for those who love God and are calling toward Him, just for everything. Mother Angelica talks about this all the time, and in Raymond's new book, you know, you have to live in the present moment,
right,
and have faith in God in the present moment. Everything that's coming from the hand of God, everything that He either ordains or permits, is His will, and He has the power to pull good out of that without taking away from our free choice and our free will.
Right. Right. And I love the question about asking God if He exists, and if it's a, you know, not a test, but a sincere prayer, if you're confused, if you're struggling, if you have doubts, if you feel like you're being attacked, you ask that from the bottom of your heart.
And He's going to say yes to that. You know,
yeah.
So many people argue about God's existence. You know, they look at all the arguments, and they should ask God a question instead of treating Him as a question. Just say to Him, God, I don't know if You exist. I'm having some trouble. Show me that You're there, and He'll show you. He's not going to come down in bodily form. You won't hear, you know, thunder and lightning. But something's going to happen in your life, something that is more than a coincidence, and you're going to say when that something happens, wow, that couldn't have been from me. I didn't do that. I didn't make any phone calls. I didn't schedule that. It's obviously from God. You know, the letter of James says, you know, draw near to God, and God will draw near to you. So you take a step towards God, He's going to take two towards you.
And I don't know if you do this or not, but I tell people when I give my testimony and talks that to write down their God sentences or their God moments and keep like a little journal and just write down things that you know are an answer to prayer, or, for example, when you have you know, really divine intervention like I did this morning. Write those things down, because when you're having a tough day and you feel like you're alone, you can take out that little journal and you can look at it and you can remember, oh, yeah, God does love me.
C.S. Lewis said something like that, too. He said, sometimes, it really feels like I really feel that God exists and all of this is true, and sometimes I feel that it's all nonsense. You know, you can't go by your emotions.
Right.
So when you do see things that objectively happen that are from God and you write them down, then when you're feeling, when your emotions are telling you the opposite thing, pull out your little book and take a look at the objective facts.
This is a great book, and it's so theologically sound, which I think is just wonderful. But it really is the truth about our relationship to God, because God is our Father, and He knows best. And there are ways to connect with God that can really help us understand the bigger picture, as frustrating as it may seem sometimes. You know, I'm sure you feel this, because even when you're not praying and you're just pondering things in your heart, or you're just thinking about things, God continues to talk to us like He did to me this morning. That has happened to me so many times.
Yeah, God, you know, prayer is just communication with God.
Right.
That's the way it is. And, you know, as our Protestant brethren say, you know, what this is about is a relationship with the Lord. That's what we Catholics want, too. And in a relationship, when you have communication in a relationship, it's two-way. It's not just one way. You just don't pray to God. He's talking to you all the time, too. You just have to listen.
That's right. Especially sometimes it's tough for Italians because we're talking off the top.
Like me.
Yes. Anthony, give us the website again for the book.
www.10prayers.com.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506. Father Benedict Groeschel and EWTN's Jeanette Benkovic are some of the speakers participating in the 11th Annual Holy Trinity Apostolate Lenten Symposium. Love One Another is on February 23rd at St. Cyril and Methodius in Sterling Heights. Holy Mass begins at 8 a.m. with the Most Reverend Daniel E. Flores and closes with benediction from the Most Reverend John Quinn at 4. Speakers include, direct from Rome, Reverend Monsignor Charles Mangan on Mary's Sacrifices. Father Groeschel shares the significance of the Pope's new book. Jeanette Benkovic describes how you can embrace the cross with hope. Sister Marie Andre and Father Bob Spiza complete this wonderful event. It's the 11th Annual Holy Trinity Apostles Castle at Lenten Symposium, February 23rd, emceed by WDEO's Teresa Tamio. Your $40 pre-registration includes lunch, so call 248-625-2461 or go to HolyTrinityApostolate.com. That's 248-625-2461. Your attendance and support makes this annual symposium possible.
As a parent, do you have any goals as you raise your children?
This is Real Family Life with Dennis Rainey, author of the new devotional book for couples, Moments with You. It's New Year's Day, Tuesday, January 1st.
I'm a basketball player, and it's a big deal to see how high you can jump. And so my New Year's resolution is always to jump higher and increase that.